Welcome to our review of the news and of the problems of the global New World Order that is all about us today. Today we read that the Catholic Patriarch in Jerusalem has called for the dismantling of Israel's security wall. The Reverend Michael Saba, the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, made those comments on Saturday after leading a procession from the city to Bethlehem, the birthplace of Jesus Christ. This top Roman Catholic has said that Bethlehem has become an immense prison since the West Bank barrier was built, calling for its dismantling as he joined thousands of pilgrims who were approaching the area for the midnight mass. He said to the pilgrims, "This wall must not exist. One day it will not exist." And he said that also to Israeli radio after he passed through a military checkpoint into Bethlehem. The patriarch said that the barrier, which Israel says it erected to curb suicide bombings and Palestinians say is a land grab, has turned the town into an immense prison. "Nobody needs checkpoints in the Holy Land," he said. Saba said the Palestinians should have the right to live freely in their own state, while stressing also that the Israelis have a right to be safe. So there you have it, one of many, many problems in the Holy Land. But that one really is kind of overwhelmed by the immigration police saying that Israel is no longer attractive in the women's trade. And by that they mean, and this is in Haaretz.com, by that they mean the white slavery trade that has taken place in Israel for many, many years, and which Haaretz and the Jerusalem Post has commented on. And you can check that out in your library or on the internet. According to the story by Eddie Spiegel, who's a correspondent at Haaretz, there's been a significant decrease in Israeli participation in the international women's trade. Isn't that interesting? In Israeli participation in the international women's trade. Well, actually, the women's trade is mostly run by Israel anyway. But there's been a significant decrease in Israeli participation in the international women's trade. And according to a representative of the immigration police, quote, "Israel has stopped being an attractive destination for the trade of women," unquote, as prostitutes, due to the country's recent crackdown on pimps and bordellos. And the reason for this crackdown has been the exposure, partly at Jew Watch and at other organs throughout the world, of people who are dedicated, like myself, to researching what the Jews have done and bringing it out that there is this trafficking in white prostitution and white slavery, where these women are talked into coming to Israel, saying that, "We're going to give you a nice job here, you're going to clean house for a nice Jewish family, etc." And when they get there, they don't clean house. No, they're placed in a house of prostitution and told, "Listen, you have to pay for your trip here. You have to work it off," and they force them into prostitution. And when they try to escape, the police take them back to the bordello. The story says that in 2004, Israel deported almost 3,000 women illegally residing in Israel from the Commonwealth of Independent States, which was the old Soviet Union, the CIS, of whom 900 or 31% had been brought in as prostitutes. But you can bet that the rest of them were also prostitutes. I mean, this is probably a story that is really trying to pretend to have candor, but really isn't telling the truth. In 2005, the number of women illegally in Israel from the CIS decreased to 558, of whom 22 or 20% were victims of the women's trade. Well, I find that to be less than truthful. I'm sure that the women's prostitution continues to go on in Israel. I think this is probably just a story. We've had so many lies from Israel that it's really difficult to cut through the garbage and to get to the actual nugget of truth, but at least they're talking about it. But they're trying to paint themselves as having improved, and I don't know if I believe them completely. I don't think that I do. We also read on Jew Watch very, very recently that an Austrian man has gotten 2 months tacked onto a theft sentence for the use of a Nazi oath. The Associated Press reports that in Vienna, Austria, an Austrian man who used the oath of loyalty to Adolf Hitler for his cell phone voicemail was cruelly sentenced to 2 months in prison for that. Police came across the message on the 20-year-old's phone in 2004 when they called to question him about a burglary. Prosecutors say he downloaded the message from the internet and includes the repeating of the phrase Sieg Heil. Oh my goodness, can you just imagine? A 20-year-old kid, as a joke, puts Hitler giving a speech in which Sieg Heil is on it, and so they give him 2 months in jail for that. I think that's pretty lousy. I think that Austria could do something a little better with its time. Now, in England, they love to talk about what a wonderful multicultural society it is. Well, guess what? It's not quite as wonderful as they try to say that it is, because just recently, Congolese immigrants were found guilty in check theft scams and have been sentenced, and they're going to be deported. A British court has found a former postman, black as the Ace of Spades, I assume, and as global as can be, who perpetrated a £20 million fraud. This man, who gets to live in England and become a British citizen, even though he is African, was perpetrating £20 million, which were stolen from British subjects. He did this by stealing thousands of checkbooks and selling them to money launderers. He was sentenced to 6.5 years in prison. They say he used the money to fund a luxurious lifestyle. Well, I bet he did. I bet he did. I mean, £20 million, that's getting close to about $40 million. That's a lot of money. Police told the Harrow Crown Court that Dido Mayue Belizika, 34, a Congolese asylum seeker and resident of Camden, North London, used to intercept checkbooks over a period of 3 years from the postal sorting office where he worked, while his brother-in-law, Ishiaba Kazonga, 40, also an immigrant from Congo, sold them to a group of money launderers. The court found Kazonga guilty and sentenced him to 3.5 years in jail. It is estimated that nearly 1,500 checkbooks were stolen from the Golders Green area of North London alone. Isn't that something? You invite them in and they steal from you. They steal from you. Well, Belizika, who was granted asylum in the UK on the plea that he feared persecution in the Congo, has to be immediately deported after his release from the prison. Why? Because now they realize he posed a threat to the society. You have to ask yourself if he can be deported now. If he was under pressure in the Congo and they can deport him now, why did they bring him in the first place? Is it England's responsibility to bring these people in when they're being persecuted elsewhere? I don't think that it is. It's just a sham. They just want to bring these people in because the Jewish supremacists want England to be destroyed through multiculturalism, the same way the Jewish supremacists of Rome destroyed Rome through the introduction of Vandals and Goths and all these other people into the Roman fabric. They've done this for millennia. We have another story at the VOA News that Israel Sharon has returned to work after his stroke. Now this thug, this war criminal, Ariel Sharon, who's the Prime Minister of Israel, held his weekly meeting with his cabinet on Sunday. The severely overweight and self-admitted food lover joked with cabinet members about his health, warning them about the dangers of eating fried foods during the Jewish Hanukkah holiday, which begins on Sunday. Mr. Sharon evidently spent most of last week resting after being hospitalized for a mild stroke, but the doctors say that the illness has not caused any permanent damage. Public opinion says that the Prime Minister is expected to win a third term as leader of a new centrist party in a general election. Isn't that nice? The Arabs would be nice to know that. He'll be killing them as he did during his first two terms in office. And of course, America, being the annex of Israel, will support everything that he does. Because if they don't, well then the Jewish media will kick the rear end of President Bush and Cheney and the rest of them and bring them to ruin. ABC News Online reports that Israel has detained an Australian woman for the past 5 days after refusing to leave the country. Her name was Shiri Locke, and she had been planning to attend a peace conference in the West Bank town of Bethlehem, but was denied entry into Israel. Gabby Lasky, who is Miss Locke's lawyer, said that her client is appealing the decision in Tel Aviv's district court. She said, quote, "We have an interim order denying the state the possibility of sending her back until she has her day in court," unquote. Ms. Lasky says authorities feared Miss Locke was planning to demonstrate against Israel's separation barrier. She also said, quote, "I can confirm that there are blacklists in Israel and people who have come as peace and human rights activists. The state really doesn't want to have them in Israel," unquote. "We believe that peace activists do not represent any security threat or any other threat to the state of Israel, and that's why we decided to appeal." Well, good luck to you. You might win and you might not, but they sure ruined her trip, haven't they? Absolutely. In The Plain Dealer, Cleveland, we find that an ex-Clevelander will be tried next spring in Lithuania on war crime charges. Now, this poor old guy is cursed with a fading memory, and there are few witnesses to anything that actually happened back in the 1940s. And the Nazi hunters who brought him to Lithuania say that the man whose name is Algimanta Delid, that his trial means justice, even if it comes 64 years since his work in Vilnius, Lithuania, where he supposedly committed some war crimes. If convicted, Dalidi, 84, could become the first man sent to prison in Lithuania for crimes committed during World War II. Two others have been charged in Lithuania in the past 6 years. One died during trial, the other suffered from senility and was never punished. Dalidi represents one of the most difficult cases in the long history of criminal prosecutions of suspected Nazis. Because after all, how can an aging man with such little recollection of the past defend himself in court? So, there you have it. Now, the Jews in Lithuania killed thousands and thousands of Lithuanians for the Soviet Union, where their buddies, including Joseph Stalin, said, "I want to send you in here as Russians, and get a hold of the Jews in here, we'll find out who the right-wingers are, and we're going to kill them all." Well, I don't see Lithuania taking them to prison for their war crimes. But by golly, if you're of the Jewish race, you're special, and you get things like this done. Absolutely. And why not? When you got money like that, when you own the currency, you can pretty much get what you want. Now, the Denizens of America, who are IPAC, which is the pro-Israel lobby, guess what? They're being sued. Yes, they're being sued by their own people. In Washington, according to the Forward News, two former employees of the nation's main pro-Israel lobby who are facing trial for allegedly receiving classified information and relaying that information to foreign diplomats and the press, in other words, for being spies, are considering lawsuits against IPAC, who is basically the lobbying powerhouse of America that controls practically every congressman. Steve Rosen, the former director of foreign policy at the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, and Keith Weissman, IPAC's former Iran analyst, are considering suing IPAC over its stopping payments of legal fees to their attorneys. That's according to the sources close to the two. They are also considering a defamation suit against IPAC if they are exonerated for accusing them of unbecoming conduct. Indications that Rosen and Weissman are preparing to sue IPAC have caused the collapse of negotiations between their attorneys and IPAC's attorneys over the lobby's coverage of the two men's legal fees, according to sources close to both sides. To the dismay of the Jewish lobby and its supporters and members, relations between IPAC's leadership and its two former employees have deteriorated sharply in recent months to the point of bitter exchanges and accusations and threat of this legal action. and the hostility is expected to peak at the two men's trial, scheduled to start in late April of 2006. Defense attorneys for these two will try to establish that the men were following the organization's routine practice of collecting information and giving it to the Mossad and to other foreign people as a spy agency, and that IPAC's top officials were fully aware of their actions. Quote, the evidence in this case will show that Dr. Rosen and Mr. Weissman always acted in IPAC's interest, never were on their own, and acted with the knowledge and approval of their superiors, unquote. Rosen's lawyer, Abe Lowell, told the Forward. Now, there you have it. There you have it. It's on GWatch. We've been following it for many years, how IPAC has been spying, how they've been caught spying. And this time, hopefully, it'll be on Court TV, but I'll just bet you that you're not going to hear much of it on Court TV. When the really good, juicy stuff comes out, they'll switch to an ad or something else. I don't think they're going to be really fair about it, but we'll see. You know, we'll see what they do. They can still prove themselves good. Now, Christmas this year, guess what happened? The Israelis opened the gate so you could get into the town of Bethlehem if you were a Christian. Isn't that nice? Now, they've surrounded the town of Bethlehem with a wall 12 feet high so that nobody can get over it, with barbed wire all over it. But for Christmas, they're allowing more than 30,000 pilgrims who braved the cold and driving rain to visit the ancient grotto and the Church of the Nativity. I've been there. I can't imagine how they could all get down in there. It's just a little room. It's just a little dinky cave, and you have to go down there just a few at a time to get into it. Tradition says that Jesus Christ was born there. The 30,000 is double the number from the last year, and fears of terrorism have kept visitors away since the Palestinian uprising erupted in 2000, but a ceasefire and lull in violence prompted pilgrims, 30,000 of them, to return to Bethlehem. Stephen Ogden, who came from the state of Tennessee, said, quote, obviously you hear a lot about this part of the world and you feel a little nervous coming in, but since we've been here, everything seems very peaceful so far and seems safe, unquote. Well, of course, Mr. Ogden, if it isn't, you will be nearer thy God to thee. Jamie John Pearson, who lives in Utah, wasn't worried. Jamie said, quote, it's a privilege to be here, and we only get one life in this world, and I wanted to be able to visit here at least once for Christmas. So I guess my joy and privilege to be here overrides any fear that I have, she said. And Juanita Hoffman of Florida? For her, the Grotto of the Nativity was an experience of faith. She said, oh, it was awesome. It was just unbelievable. I couldn't believe I was there. Well, evidently, the pilgrims did bring some Christmas cheer to the troubled Bethlehem economy, which depends on tourism. You can imagine how bad it is when you're in Bethlehem and there's this huge 8-meter high, which actually is 26 feet high, cement wall, which is a part of Israel's separation barrier in the southern West Bank town of Bethlehem. Can you imagine? How would you feel, wherever you're living, if suddenly the Jews came and built a 26-foot wall around your town and you couldn't get in or out without going through a checkpoint where Jews had guns? Wouldn't you start to feel a little edgy, like you were in a concentration camp? Like the patriarch said, it's like a prison here. And with that kind of a wall, of course it's like a prison. Now, IPAC, which is the Jewish lobby that's being investigated for spying, which was in the last story we talked about, has been slamming Bush's Iran policy. The pro-Israeli lobbying group has criticized Bush's administration for reversing its stance on Iran's nuclear program, failing to support bringing the case before the UN Security Council. IPAC feels the new policy is disturbing and dangerous, and has said so in its letter to Congress. According to a reporter named Yitzhak Ben-Horon, I'd just like to have a name like Ben-Horon, huh? At YNetNews.com, Ben-Horon says, American President George W. Bush's handling of Iran's nuclear program is, quote, disturbing and dangerous, unquote. And that was claimed also by the pro-Israeli lobbying committee, IPAC, the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee. And it was reported on Capitol Hill by the Washington Post. The news release mostly criticized the United States' willingness to accept a Russian compromise to allow Iran to develop nuclear energy under Russian supervision. Now, the Jews don't trust Russia since they were kicked out of there. I mean, they used to run the Soviet Union, but now that the Goyim are running it, the Jews under IPAC, which clashed with Democratic and Republican leaders in the past, has until now remained a kind of supportive of Bush and his administration, which is considered to be one of Israel's greatest allies. But now they're not so sure, because everything that Bush is doing isn't exactly what they want. So now they're going to kind of, you know, gig him a little bit. The pro-Israeli lobby set out to target Bush and his strategy after the president recently reversed his stance on the Iranian issue. Bush decided to hold off pushing to report Iran's nuclear case to the UN Security Council. That terrible Bush, look what he did. He let us Jews down. My goodness. In a statement to members of Congress, IPAC said that it is concerned that the decision not to go to the Security Council, combined with the U.S. decision to support the Russian proposal, indicates a disturbing shift in the administration's policy on Iran and poses a danger to the U.S. and our allies. Well, I guess our allies mean France and Germany, right? No, it means Israel, because that's all IPAC is concerned with, is the Israeli and American cooperation, the deal, the bond, the bund. IPAC stated in its letter, quote, "This decision will facilitate Iran's quest for nuclear weapons and undermines international efforts to stop Iran from achieving such a capacity." Well, IPAC, why don't you offer to give up Israel's nuclear weapons then? Israel has 200 to 400 of them. Why don't you take the nuclear weapons from Israel so they can't be used against Iran? And then Iran won't need the nuclear weapons, will they? Oh, but they will, because I forgot, the United States is right on their border in Iraq, so obviously they're scared that we're going to go in there next. And they know if they have a few nukes, well, we probably wouldn't do that, would we? In the past 2 years, Israel and the United States saw eye to eye on the subject of bringing Iran's case to the Security Council. The American government, however, has mellowed its standpoint on the issue in fear that Russia will veto any proposal regarding Iran in the Council. Yeah, well, it kind of works that way, doesn't it? Notably, what apparently prompted IPAC to release the letter were recent statements by Israeli government officials expressing concern over Bush's handling of the Iranian case. And, of course, IPAC is an operative of the Israeli government, a foreign power, which is an enemy of the United States. Today in Jew Watch, we read that the last of Halloween candy has been eaten. The harvest moon is a radiant memory. The family festival of Thanksgiving has drawn us closer together. And all of these warm seasonal memories can mean only one thing. It's time for the Christmas haters to shift into high gear. And this is an opinion article by poor Thomas Clough. And Mr. Clough and Weird Republic says, he says, who are the Christian haters? Well, if we are to draw a conclusion from the hundreds of heartfelt and articulate commentaries currently on display on the internet, they fall loosely into these self-identified groups: Jews, atheists, secular humanists, and pagans. While many Jews, atheists, humanists, and pagans make an effort to distinguish themselves from members of the other unhappy groups, there is a tremendous amount of overlap between these groups. For example, the word Jew can be used to designate a devout adherent of Judaism, or simply anyone who has grown comfortable with Jewish customs, sentiments, perspectives, and rhythms. In short, there are religious Jews and there are ethnic Jews. The ethnic Jews might also be atheists or pantheists or Wiccans or heaven knows what. Mr. McClough says, a 1998 poll of Los Angeles Jews commissioned by the Jewish Federation of Greater Los Angeles revealed that only 41% of respondents were firm in their belief in any sort of willful conscious deity. Only 41%, that means that 59% didn't believe in a deity. The 1990 National Jewish Population Survey makes clear that only half of American Jews are affiliated with any Jewish congregation. Jews are most likely to join a synagogue when they have school-aged children, often because of family pressure. They see the synagogue as a place where their children can receive an education in Jewish heritage, an education the parents themselves are ill-equipped to communicate because of their own meager religious education, because of a lifetime of holding Jewish rituals or any organized Jewish life at arm's length. After their sons have had their bar mitzvah, most Jews dump their synagogue memberships. The odd reality is that these parents sought out a synagogue to imbue their children with religious beliefs that the parents themselves do not hold dear. The American Jewish Yearbook estimated the total number of American Jews of all descriptions to be 6,155,000 in 2001. That would mean that Jews are about 2.1% of our total population. To put that in perspective, says Mr. McClough, there are more fundamentalist Christians living in the southern states, commonly known as the Bible Belt, than there are Jews of any description on the entire planet. In her handbook, God Optional Judaism, author Judith Seed quotes a rabbi who says of his congregation, quote, probably more than half of them are atheists or agnostics, unquote. And the Wiccans, ladies and gentlemen, according to Mr. McClough, are eager to share the stage with any recognized religion, and you have the nucleus of a nasty seasonal tradition of trashing Christians. By getting all these pagans together with Jews and anybody else who will hate Christianity. He asks, why do the Jews hate Christmas? And his answer is, for many Jews, their grudge against Christmas begins in September or thereabout, when their employers do not allow them Yom Kippur as a holiday from work, even though it is the most important holy day of the Jewish calendar. These Jews must take a vacation day for their observances. In her essay, Christmas, Schmithmas, an unhappy Penelope Trunk informs us that as workers, Jews have to observe Christmas. Quote, it's a weird day to have off from work. No stores are open. There's nothing on TV. Most restaurants are closed. It's a boring day. A good day to be at work, but we are forced to take a holiday, unquote. She goes on saying, quote, the nothingness of Christmas to most Jews. It is absurd how much Christmas cheer the Jews partake in just to fit in at office. Jews are having to be someone they are not in order to fit in, unquote. Well, isn't that just too darn bad, Miss Trunk, since you decided to live in a Christian country? Now, maybe if you went to Israel, you wouldn't have this problem, would you? No, you wouldn't, but you chose to come here. So why don't you just shut up, sit in the corner, and lick your wrist and be quiet? Oh, no, but you can't, can you? Because you think that you have a right to tell Christians what to do and to be resentful that you live in a Christian country, and you're a free country, you're a free person, and that airport is right there at New York. You can go straight to Israel and never have to put up with this again. Otherwise, my dear, I want you to shut up, okay? I'm sick and tired of minorities thinking they're going to tell a vaster majority what to do with their lives because they live here now. No, you can't do that. You've been tolerated into doing that and pouring your poison all over us. But I'm not going to listen to you anymore. That's what Jew Watch is all about. It's about confronting you and your arrogance. Your arrogance, your owning of the news, and your ability to manipulate everybody through it. But you don't manipulate me. I see what you're doing. I see that our tolerance of you has been turned around and your intolerance of Christmas, everything Christian, of everything European. And I don't care what you think, Miss Trunk, or any of you Jewish people. When you come to live in somebody else's country and you're only 1% or 2%, you keep your mouth shut or get the heck out. You don't go into a classroom and start disrupting it without being sent to the principal's office. And if it gets bad enough, you're sent home and you're kicked out of the school. Well, you've gotten bad enough in America with the Iraqi war and all of these other things that you've done, including the introduction of communism, socialism, and immigration and integration to our country that's destroying us, that you deserve to leave our country. in the opinion of many that we have reported on here in the pages of Jew Watch. So, my dear, I am one of the few who will talk back to you. Isn't that too bad of me? I just feel ashamed. I'd like to say something today also about Menachem Begin as a little something for history that you could take home with you. Menachem Begin, who was the Prime Minister of Israel, murdered 100 Arabs on April the 9th, 1948. Early in the morning, commandos of the Irgun, or Shin Bet, headed by Menachem Begin and the Stern Gang, attacked the town of Deir Yassin. It was a village with about 750 Palestinian residents. It was outside of the area to be assigned by the United Nations to be a Jewish state. It had a very peaceful reputation, but it was located on high ground in the corridor between Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, and according to Plan Dalet, it was to be destroyed and the residents evacuated. In all, over 100 men, women, and children were systematically murdered by Mr. Menachem Begin, the terrorist, the Israeli terrorist, Prime Minister. 53 orphan children were literally dumped along the wall of the old city, where they were found by Miss Hind Husseini and brought behind the American Colony Hotel to her home, which was become the Dar El Tifel E. L. Rabi Orphanage. Why did they do it? They did it to terrorize the Arabs, so that a few weeks later, when the war started, after having they actually disemboweled these people in front of the others that were watching, who were terrified that it was going to happen to them next. It was extremely bloody. People were screaming, begging for their lives. The Jews were just killing them and ripping them to shreds so that people could see their throats and their guts hanging out. And when they let the others go, they made sure that all of this got into the newspapers all over the Arab states, all over the Palestinian Directorate, so that all the Arabs knew about it, so that when the war started, they were terrified. So they got up and they left. They ran for their lives when the war started, thinking, well, when it's over, I'll come back and I'll be safe. What happened? They walked back to their homes, and they found that there were soldiers there at the road. And the soldiers said, you can't come in here because you're an enemy of the state. We live there. That's our town. No, you're the enemy of the state. I have orders to keep you out of here. So they were never allowed to return to their home or their property. And it was all planned by the Jews, the people who now run Occupied Palestine. I call it Israel, but it's really Occupied Palestine. And these thugs of this world, these criminals who run Occupied Palestine, and who have committed genocide upon the Palestinians themselves in order to make this illegal nation of theirs that these gangsters have put together, and which they now protect using the United States, using the corruption of our presidents here and our congressmen, who do everything that they want because they're totally terrified of these people, because these people can ruin them. These people can absolutely ruin them, and they're absolutely terrified. And why wouldn't they be, you know? Why wouldn't they be? Well, Mr. Begin, he had his comeuppance later. Things that totally followed him was the King David Hotel massacre. And Menachem Begin was with the Shin Bet and the Irgun. And he bombed this hotel in which there were 300 people. These were civilian people. There were women and children who were married to British soldiers. And it was done as an act of terror. An act of terror. And the bombing of the King David Hotel will never be forgotten. Ever. Now, that occurred on June the 29th, 1946. And the Irgun, which were Jewish terrorist groups, like sort of like the Hamas and Hezbollah, but they were Jewish, the Irgun chose the King David Hotel as a target after the British troops invaded the Jewish agency on June the 29th, 1946. They confiscated large quantities of documents at the Jewish agency. And about the same time, more than 2,500 Jews from all over Palestine were placed under arrest, and the information about Jewish agency operations, including intelligence activities in Arab countries, was taken to the King David Hotel. Now, this is what the Jews say. This is what the Jews say. But what really happened was, we don't know if they were taken there. The real object of the King David Hotel bombing was not those particular things. you get all this lies. This was in the Jewish Virtual Library. This was their reason, they said. It's a lie. Yeah, they may have been there, but the bombing was so general, it was just to destroy the lives of people and to make the British want to leave the protectorate of Palestine so that the Jews could run occupied Palestine, so they could occupy it, mess with the Arabs, take their land, and use them as kind of semi-slaves to do their house cleaning, to do their lawns, to build their buildings, and then to go back home with very little money in their pocket, to act as slaves for the Jews. At any rate, this was a great atrocity. It was in headlines all around the world. The bombing of the King David Hotel was an act of terrorism, as is the entire state of Israel. And it is still run as such. And I've been to Israel, and I remember taking the bus from Tel Aviv to Galilee. There was nothing at Galilee then. This was before the great tourism hotels that were built there. There was almost nothing. There was a little small town. It was very dirty and filthy. Nothing there. I went up there. And on the way up there, every 15 minutes, I believe it was every 15 minutes, the music would stop on the little bus radio. There would be a beeping sound, and everybody would get really quiet. And in Hebrew, German, and Russian, and English, they would tell the horrible stories of atrocities of the day, which is how they kept these people in line. They kept them terrified. Kept them absolutely terrified. And that's what they do. That's exactly what they do. They've been running that fascist state, keeping their people terrified for many, many years. Many years. Well, thank you very much for listening to the radio show for today. I want to thank you. I want you to keep going to Jew Watch to find out what the Jews have been doing on a daily basis. And when you get up there, look for the radio show. See if I can get one together for that day. If not, I'll have it some other day. But I want you to get the information about what these people are doing, because it affects you. Because they run your country mostly. Or more than likely, it's your country that they're running, whether you're in Russia or the United States or England or France or Australia. Your lives are being affected by what the Jews do, who are a very tiny minority, but they own the currencies of the world, and through that they're able to own most of the business establishments, the news media, etc., and they are telling you things that they want you to hear. They may not be true, but they want you to hear it, and they want you to believe it. I'm here to look at what they say, since they're the ones collecting the information, and to comment on it and to bring the information to you. Most of this information is stuff that they just say to themselves in their small newspapers. I have at my resources most of these newspapers on a daily basis, so I'm able to see what they're doing behind the lines. They think nobody reads what they read. Well, we do read what they read, because it's always available. And a lot of times they'll even put it in the regular publications because they just think no one's going to be smart enough to notice the vileness of many of their activities. They just think that we are stupid as Gentiles. And you know what? They're probably right. No one ever lost a bet on the amount of stupidity that's in the mind of a Gentile. Because we've allowed these people to come into our countries to sit like Trojan horses, telling us to tear down our walls and allow immigrants to come in here and destroy our way of life. They don't care about our way of life. They're foreigners. They're only 1 or 2%. I mean, they're a little tiny minority, and they suffer from that. And they want us to suffer the same feeling. They want to make us, the majority, into a minority so that we suffer just like them, and so that our lives become filled with the same chaos and the marginalization that theirs has always been. But you see, they have a country now, which is Israel, that they could go to and be a majority there. They could do that, but they won't, because they are used to living off of the fruits of other people, and to do that, they have to live in these other countries. And they're able to rise to the top of Hollywood, to the top of banking, because the people who make the decisions as to who is going to be hired are themselves Jewish. And they're always willing to hire another Jew first. I mean, that's the way people are. It's like a little family operation to them. Every business is a family operation to them. They want to make sure that the Jews control everything and that they pass it on down. And so you, as a non-Jew, are cut out by these racist people. It's Jewish supremacism. It's wrong, it's vile, and it's evil. Thank you very much for coming to Jew Watch today. And we will see you tomorrow.